This podcast is brought to you by the Department of War Studies at King's College London. Welcome to the War Studies Podcast. My name is Kirk Allen. On the 4th through 6th of September, the Connections UK Wargaming Conference, hosted by King's College London, once again succeeded in bringing together wargaming users, practitioners, and academics to advance and sustain the art, science, and application of wargaming. In light of this annual event, we are once again going to talk wargaming. Despite how it sounds, wargaming is not necessarily a leisure activity. Although wargames are interesting and thrilling to play, many of these games are played in order to simulate and model armed conflict without the actual use of force. Through these wargames, practitioners in the armed forces and academics alike often seek to better understand the dynamics of past and future conflicts. In this edition of the War Studies Podcast, we are going to hear from three of this year's Connections UK organizers and participants broadly about wargaming in the academic and professional contexts, as well as wargame design. But first, Professor Wynne Bowen, head of the School of Security Studies, had a few important announcements and recognitions to give at this year's conference. Let's listen in on Professor Bowen's brief introduction.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It's my great pleasure to welcome you all here to King's today for the start of Connections UK. My name is Wynne Bowen. As you've heard, I'm the head of the School of Security Studies here, which comprises both our War Studies department upstairs, but also we have a Defence Studies department at the Staff College out at Shrivenham at the Defence Academy. So at King's here, we're delighted to have hosted the ever-growing Connections UK since its inception several years ago in 2013. And it builds further, of course, on our relationship with the Ministry of Defence in this and other areas. The role King's plays working with DSTL and the Defence Academy of the UK in putting together this event is something the university does place significant importance on, primarily because it contributes to sharing and spreading best practice, obviously, and advancing and sustaining the art, science, and application of wargaming. And also, I think, because it kind of reflects the contribution that King's makes through the production of a graduate line of specialists who go on to work in places like DSTL in the wargaming sphere. Over the last 2 to 3 years, I've been directly involved working with colleagues, notably Ivanka Bazashka there in the second row, but also with Phil and Aggie Hurst as well, on designing, developing, and running strategic wargames as part of an original research project funded by the Carnegie Corporation of New York under its initiative to explore disruptive technologies and nuclear stability. Our aim with that project is to further the understanding of the relationship between missile defense and nuclear weapons in the context of US, NATO, and Russia in the evolving strategic environment, specifically in the European context. And to do this, we're trying to inform the US and European expert debate on the relationship between missile defense and nuclear weapons. So that research project has combined quantitative and qualitative methods and has drawn on documentary analysis and research interviews, but most notably, it's involved experimentation in the form of strategic wargaming. And many of you in this room would have participated. And we ran several games with different scenarios focused on the Baltic and also focused on Southeast Europe and centered on Ukraine. While the two strategic wargames were designed to provide a means through which to think through the potential impact of missile defense as a disruptive technology, the games provided significant insights into any future integrated conflict involving NATO and Russia, and by direct implication, into strategic stability in Europe and the evolution of the wider international security environment. So for the project, we developed a new method of strategic wargaming, and to the best of our knowledge, we believe this is the most systematic use of gaming technology to explore the part of the problem that most people don't want to come to terms with, and that's conflict escalation. We've made available our scenarios for use in other war games, in tabletop exercises and also in teaching and in classroom simulations. And we do encourage others to build on this, to share, to adapt, and use the scenarios that we've developed going forward. Wargaming, as you all know, is an undervalued method of inquiry that can be useful for gleaning insights into complex and uncertain environments and for engaging diverse stakeholders. We believe King's is at the forefront of developing new tools and insights in this area, the project I just mentioned, for example, and it's why we're in the process of scoping the development of a new wargaming centre here at King's. And the purpose of the centre, which you'll hear more about over the next 2 days, I'm sure, will be to further the theory and application of wargaming as a method of inquiry and as a method of learning and teaching. And we've been encouraged in this direction, for example, by some very positive comments, notably on the two strategic war games that we ran as part of this Carnegie project. One very senior, former very senior US defense official noted about the game that he participated in, that it was among the very best of the many in which he's participated in replicating what high-level decision-making is like in the real world. So I will stop there. Shameless bit of advertising about our plans for a wargaming center. Once again, welcome to King's College London. I'm going to try to make a few of the sessions, and I'll hand over.
Judging by Professor Bone's introduction and announcement of the School of Security Studies' new wargaming center, there is little doubt that wargaming is perceived as a useful practice in professional and academic circles. But why is wargaming still often considered an undervalued practice? Before the conference, I had the opportunity to speak with Professor Philip Sabin, convener on King's Conflict Simulation MA module, and one of the conference's organizers, about wargaming and the challenges it still faces in the academic context. I started our interview by asking him to define wargaming.
The definition of wargaming has always been a very vexed issue, and no two definitions really align because there's so many complex nuances and different people differ as to what's in and what's out of the activity. Basically, wargaming is a simulation, modeling of conflict, not involving the actual use of force. You're not actually killing people as in the gladiatorial games in ancient Rome, for example, although some would call them games of war. Indeed, the whole point of wargaming is to model the activity, which the real activity, of course, does involve the use of force. That's what distinguishes war from other forms of societal interaction. But you model it in a way that does not involve the expenditure of blood. And the hope is that thereby you can understand it better and be able to save blood in the real thing, either by being able to fight the war in a less bloody fashion, or hopefully to avoid the war in the first place if you can anticipate the ways in which it might occur. So it's a modeling, a simulation of the activity, but without the central feature of the activity, which is the shedding of blood.
I kind of want to focus a little on what wargaming offers in the academic context. How can wargaming benefit not only military personnel, but also students and researchers who are studying armed conflict?
The main professional users of wargames over the past 200 years or so have been the military. They, from the time of Clausewitz really, realized that this vicarious modeling of war, allowing you to practice without actual sacrifice, was a very useful activity, and they've continued to do that ever since the Prussian Kriegsspiel, which simply means war game, of the early 19th century. Academics have picked up on this much more recently, within the last generation or two, and that has been, I think, a consequence of the rise of strategic studies as a legitimate area for academic activity and concern, the wish to model the dynamics of conflict, particularly the dynamics of crises. So academic war games, the great majority of these are what are called political military games, and these are simulations of a crisis like the Cuban Missile Crisis, for instance, played in class in order to give students a dynamic sense of the conflicting interests and what was going on, rather than simply lecturing about it or reading about it, do you see? The great majority of academic war games focus on the crisis phase with negotiation and discussion and trying to build coalitions and so on. Those who are interested in the nuts and bolts of actual conflict, like myself, you know, the strategy and tactics of the war itself rather than the avoidance of war, also use the techniques much more akin to what the military use to model the process of fighting itself, the dynamics of air combat, for example, or tank combat, or maneuvers at the operational or strategic level within a war such as the Second World War. That's a minority activity for two reasons. Within academia in the use of wargaming. One is that there's not that many academic courses that really focus on the nuts and bolts of the conduct of war as opposed to crisis and peacemaking and so on. The other, of course, is that wargaming has a certain stigma And even if you're trying to teach people or to explore through research the dynamics of warfare, the conduct of warfare, there are many academics who don't think wargaming is an appropriate means by which to do that.
You mentioned in a 2015 article on wargaming in higher education that there is a stigma around the concept of wargaming in academia. What are a few challenges that wargaming faces?
I think the stigma arises partly from the terminology. The terminology of gaming has this sense of lack of seriousness, of childishness. The word play, for example, these are things we associate with children rather than with adults. And therefore, there's this sense of juvenilia about any use of that term game. Now, you associate that term game with war, which many academics will revolt against for other reasons, because they generally like peace and therefore any study directly of the nuts and bolts of armed conflict seems bad in itself. But to put it together with a game to trivialise the horrendous experience of war really has a very significant stigma. So there is a great use of euphemism. Rarely do you say, oh, I'm doing wargaming in academia. You say you're doing simulation. Even the military often say, oh, we don't do wargaming, we do serious conflict simulation,
right.
trying to get away from the stigma associated with that. There is a double-edged effect of the hobby of wargaming, particularly over the past two generations. Lots of enthusiasts around the world have used wargaming of various kinds as a means to study military history, particularly. And have refought all these different wars and campaigns. But of course, academia is very wary of the amateur enthusiast. And so they don't want to be accused of bringing their hobby to work. Even people like myself who do it as a hobby are very chary of coming along and trying to do it in class, because you know the assumption will be, well, you're just being childish, you're just doing what you like for fun, rather than doing something serious, do you see? Now, those problems are very much starting to be broken down now, at least as regards the study of contemporary conflict. I think there's a much greater willingness now in academia to consider techniques other than the standard lecture, seminar, reading assignment, essay, and so on. And gaming of various kinds, not just in the wargaming field, but in all sorts of different fields, is used a lot to help students to understand the dynamics of situations in business, for example, business studies, or even in medicine. Gaming techniques involve students. So as a technique, it's becoming more acceptable. One reason that wargaming has such an apparently bad name is that so few people really understand the first thing about it. It's a minority hobby, a minority activity, and one which its proponents don't say much about because they are embarrassed, basically. So very few people outside the community actually understand what wargames even are. As more people start to do it, as they come out of the closet, perhaps, you might want to say, that the activity becomes better known. And so, for example, I was at a conference up in St. Andrews earlier this year, and people that I would have thought would be precisely the ones who were saying, well, wargaming, what on earth is that? What are you doing with that? Were coming up to me and saying, congratulations on anticipating this tide. This is now the great thing, you see. So there is very much a change. The diehard skeptics tend to be those, I think, in the military history community. So for contemporary strategic studies, for looking ahead, for trying to envision what might happen, to model a crisis as we did here at King's recently in the Baltics and the Black Sea scenarios, in order to try to avoid those, that's fine, that's more respectable. To model a campaign in World War II or in the ancient world, well, many historians say, well, why? You know, we know what happened. You can't change it. Why do you want to game it as if you can open up history again? Surely that's something that's only for enthusiasts having fun. I disagree with that, but there is quite a significant hurdle to climb still in terms of military historians accepting wargaming as a useful and valid means of investigating and educating people about wars of the past.
Despite these challenges, wargaming is increasing in importance and prevalence in academia today, as evidenced by the annual Connections Wargaming Conference that is held here at King's. Why do you think this is?
I think wargaming goes in cycles. So we've seen waves of interest in wargaming in the past and periods in which it's been downgraded. I think in part that's a natural consequence of the problems of success. As wargaming becomes more accepted, lots of people jump on the bandwagon because there's money to be made from the Pentagon, from the military. They may not have the same experience in running wargames. The wargames they run may not work very well. The people who play them tend to therefore be turned off. They turn against the concept of wargaming as a whole, and therefore there's a period of dearth, as it were. So there's a certain inevitability to the cycle. But I think it's also linked in with what's happening in the world. And I think two particular reasons stand out for me as to why wargaming is very prevalent today in the Western world, particularly in the United States and in Europe. One is that we haven't done very well in our recent wars, like Afghanistan and Iraq and so on. When you've done well in a war, you think, oh, we know how to fight these wars. We don't need to have these silly little war games. We've just fought a war and won it, and all we need to do is do the same again in the future. Well, we haven't got that experience with Iraq and Afghanistan and with the mishandling of Syria and so on. And therefore, there's a sense, oh, we're not as clever as we thought we were. Let's find some means of trying to actually improve in the future. The Germans, for example, after the First World War, did a lot of wargaming. Because once you've lost a war, as they did in 1918, you don't tend to think you're as good as you did when you started the war. And wargaming tends to be used, and it was used very successfully, as a means of coming back from that situation. Now, that links in also to the second reason. Wargaming is cheap. It's cheap in terms of lives. It doesn't involve the expenditure of lives at all. But it's also cheap compared to all sorts of other activities like military exercises and so on, in terms of money. And we're now so strapped for cash, we're so desperate to make sure that we're spending the little cash that we have in the Defence Forces rightly, that wargaming is a very, very useful, cheap tool to use just to make sure you're on the right track before you spend vast amounts of money buying a piece of kit and then realise it's not actually going to work or the enemy are easily going to be able to counter it.
After my interview with Professor Sabin, I was curious to learn a little bit more about the how-to of wargaming. So, while at the Connections UK conference, I hunted down the director of the game design company Stone Paper Scissors and this year's mega game architect, Jim Wallman. I first asked Mr. Wallman how he initially got involved in wargaming.
Well, I've always been a wargamer, certainly since my youth. And that started off as with an interest in playing with toy soldiers, I guess. And I've always been a rule writer and a game designer, and that starts off in a very simple way. And then as time goes on, it turns out that the game designs that I've been working on have people have found to be useful. And so as I got more involved, it kind of crossed over with my professional life. Started off as a civil servant and then moved into the voluntary sector. So that the game design part, and it's true for a lot of game designers, the game design part to start with is often not the day job. It's often part hobby, part obsession, mostly obsession, I have to say. And as time goes on, I found that I was being asked to do more things, and it turned out that it was a case of, well, I can either do a day job and try and keep up with the demands for game design and game facilitation and so on, or jump and do it full time. So I moved into full time a few years ago now, and I think that the important part about designing games, I often rather jokingly say I moved into designing games because I'm really bad at playing them, and I could guarantee to enjoy it at least if I constructed the game. But there's an element of where my interest lies. So my interest lies in structure and in the process and the flow that comes out of a game. And so I realised that one of the reasons I'm not a very good player is I'm really interested in seeing how people interact and how the story unfolds. So in a way, it never really mattered to me very much whether I won or lost, but whether it was an interesting story, which in many conventional games is not conducive to being a winner. And so it's kind of understanding my own kind of perspective, I guess. And so that's been a consistent thread, I think, through my kind of game design history, that I'm interested in process, I'm particularly interested in the psychological and the way in which people think, their cognitive process, and that's another way of seeing a story, because you look at how people are interacting, and that's if you like, that's also the same sort of process as the narrative in fiction. So if you look at a play or a novel, what's engaging about a novel is how people interact and how they respond and what choices they make. And a game, for me, this has been my kind of core, is the games for me are constructing environments and constructing structures which set that running. So in the mega game which we ran yesterday, I was asked, did it turn out the way I expected? I have no expectation in my game designs. What I did was set up a set of circumstances. I set up a ground zero and a set of rules and procedures. So there's a technique around constructing that, and then I press go. So my involvement stops when the game starts, and I just sit back and hopefully watch what happens.
It's really cool to see wargaming taking more root in professional and academic communities. Do you feel that wargaming is becoming more salient in the professional and academic context?
Yes, but I would say that, wouldn't I? There's no question about the value of wargaming used well and done well. I've observed over the last 5 years or so is that the notion of a war game has entered into a little bit more of mainstream thought in academia and in the professional context. And whereas if one had said 20 years ago, I'm doing a war game, the perception would be either something mind-numbingly nerdy involving cardboard counters and a map, or running around a muddy field with a gun, both of which would be both true and false. But they would not be regarded as an activity for a business or an activity for academia necessarily. There are academic organisations that were doing games. They might not have called them war games, but that was always regarded as a slightly niche activity. What's happening at the moment, I observe, is that organisations are understanding that games are a cost-effective and efficient way of gaining insights, doing training, furthering research, and that's becoming mainstreamed. And I was kind of aware of it not long ago when the Today programme on BBC talked about wargaming, and when a news outlet like that uses the term wargaming not in a ha-ha, look at the strange nerds playing with toy soldiers, but this is a serious activity that we all understand what that means. And so, and now, you know, there's stuff in the news about the Labour Party using war games to try to develop their expertise in negotiation and so on. And there's corporations and companies regularly are organising business war games, and academe are regularly organising war games. So there's if you like, there's a mainstreaming of the idea, but that is that which is nice, but that in itself poses some issues around for wargaming and for the wargaming community.
What do you think of wargaming as a learning tool for understanding history?
That's brilliant. Yes, it's and there's two aspects of that. A well-executed historical war game can generate all sorts of really fundamental insights, depending on how it's been designed. But I've done quite a few of those too, and also as a learning tool, designing a game. One of the things that Phil Sabin's course does is to get people designing games as part of a learning process, And the sort of questions you ask as a game designer of history are not the same as those that a historian asks. So when I've done historical games, and I've done quite a few historically based mega games as well, the research I've gone into, and I've got all, you know, gone to all the sources, gone to Q and so on, but I've discovered that historians will write, generally speaking, in history books, historians will write what they've researched and what they've found out, and that's great. For a game, you're asking a series of very specific questions. You're asking, how did that work? How did that happen? Why did that happen then and not some other time? What was the process by which this came about? Now, if that's not immediately available to the historian, they won't write about it. They write about what they've learned. And they're not trying to construct a model of history. They're just describing a series of anecdotes, a series of stories. The better historians will give you process, but very few do. So when you get research for a game, for a war game particularly, you're asking questions that many historians don't answer, and you have to go back to primary sources. You have to go back to ask questions that weren't asked before. And that's wonderful. That's such a deep, you get such deep insights into history, because in many ways, I did a game about logistics prior to the Battle of the Somme, and I'd found a couple of sources, and suddenly it was like, I've got to go to I went to the Royal Logistics Corps library, and I found out a whole lot of stuff that nobody'd written about before. And I found these like hand-drawn sketches and stuff, but no, it was in no history book. But it made an amazing game about building railways and laying roads and so on. And that was just following game design. I didn't know I was going to have to do that. I just wanted to do a game about logistics. So that's where wargaming and wargame design can be a powerful, actually a research tool as well, because it guides your questioning.
So I wanted to ask you a question about wargaming design. What are a few of the key challenges that you face when designing a wargame?
Number one is identifying what the wargame is for. So this is something that has been talked about in the conference here, but the first and most important challenge is to be clear what the game is for. Why is this wargame being developed, and why is it being played? And if you're not able to answer that question succinctly and clearly, and not in 20 pages of description, if you're not able to do that, then your wargame design will be a big challenge, and it'll be quite hard to come up with something that actually meets. You can't design something to meet an aim if you don't have an aim. And in the professional wargaming sphere, this is a challenge, because often the client or the organisation that wants to run a war game is not clear why they want a game. And I've had conversations with organisations saying, yeah, war games are cool. We've seen war games. Maybe we've seen something I've done or someone else has done. We want a war game. And I will ask them always, why? Why do you want a war game? Because it's cool. Okay, that's not a bad reason, but it might not be the reason you need to do a war game. If you want to do a war game for a fun activity for your staff, or for your students or whatever, brilliant, you know, we can do that. If you think it's going to be beneficial to you, what benefit do you need from it? And that informs the design fundamentally. So that's kind of first cut, most important question.
What words of advice would you give to newcomers to wargaming and game design?
Right, a good question. Generally say to people when they say to me, I'm really into war games, I'm working on designing my own game, or I've got an idea for a game, and generally speaking what I will say is, just do it. Just put together some bits and pieces, whatever sort of game you're designing, get some a sheet of paper and draw something, get some counters or get whatever it is you want to do, and it doesn't matter if it's rubbish. So those would be my first cut things for any new designer, is just mess up. I mean, just play with it. War games are also about play. So use play to help you trial and error, play, mess about. Don't be afraid to fail. We learn. We only truly learn through failure. That's a big statement.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of research behind that. That learning comes through getting it wrong, and playing and messing about is where you learn to get it wrong safely. It's one of the arguments for wargaming, is it's a safe space to learn.
and to fail.
Yeah, and a safe space to fail. Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jim Waltman.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Finally, I spoke with one of our outstanding MA students, Anna Nettleship, who gave a talk at this year's conference and found wargaming to not only be a great learning tool while studying at King's, but also a practical tool for informing how we approach future conflicts.
Hi, I'm Anna Nettleship. I recently completed the War Studies MA program here at King's College. Before that, I completed a 5-year active duty contract in the Military Intelligence Branch of the U.S. Army as an Arabic linguist, where I worked as the Taskings NCO for the Brigade S3 at Fort Gordon in Georgia.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us. What was it that drew you to wargaming?
So when I originally went over the course list, I read the explanation for the conflict simulation course and honestly thought, that sounds really weird. And that's what drew me to it. I hadn't read or taken a course like that ever in my entire academic career. And so it seemed like an opportunity to get myself outside of my comfort zone, learn some skills I had no experience with, and meet people who had been exposed to parts of the study of warfare that I had not been exposed to.
So at the Connections UK Wargaming Conference, you presented on the challenges of wargaming design. What should newcomers to wargaming look out for when designing their own games?
Well, I think the most important thing you need to go over when you're first approaching wargaming is what type of wargame you're interested in designing. So I touched on two pretty major elements of wargaming. One of them was historical manual wargaming. So that's tabletop games, boards, counters, you're modeling a historical battle that actually happened. So all the facts of it are known and you get to just base what you're designing and the moves you're making on what happened in history. Then there's modeling potential or future conflicts. So that can be tabletop gaming, or it can just be teams in different rooms, sort of, they make decisions, they submit the decisions to a control team that acts as reality, and then the control team feeds back to them how their decisions affected the world. So I did tips for designing either of those, and it just really depends on what it is you're interested in getting out of your wargaming. So if you love warfare history, you want to major in that, manual historical wargames of historical battles are a really, really good way to understand it from an angle that you will never, ever get if you don't wargame the battle in question. And if you're interested in understanding potential future conflicts, as long as you are able to accurately model force capabilities and leadership decisions, you can get really good data on how a particular conflict might actually happen, the ways it might unfold, and then ways to design policies to deal with that.
Nice. That's really interesting. That kind of leads into one of my other questions. How did wargaming benefit your MA?
Well, I would say, it was just the course was very interesting since for the conflict simulation MA course, you have to make your own war game from scratch. So I got to experience that other element you learn about historical battle. So I did mine on the Battle of Stalingrad, and I wrote my minor thesis on Soviet ground tactics during the first part of the battle before the encirclement operation. And so he said to pick a battle you knew really well. I knew that one really well. And then when you're doing research for a manual war game, you realize, well, I don't know a lot of the things I needed to know to do this well. So you have to go back and read over, like I did. David Glantz wrote this enormous trilogy. Each of them is a couple thousand pages on the Battle of Stalingrad. So I bought book 2 because that covered my portion of the battle. And it's just day by day, hour by hour, this many German troops moved this many yards up this particular hill and then were driven back half that number of yards on and on and on. But it gives you an opportunity to sort of model the command decisions as if you were actually making them and learn all the sort of nitty-gritty details about things that you would never have learned about otherwise. And so I would say I got a lot of benefit out of that. Also, the course just wound up giving me the opportunity to make some professional connections, which is something that a lot of the students actually said. So I talked to my classmates before I put the presentation together to try to get some other perspectives. And all of them said that it was the most useful class in terms of making professional connections, sort of building a professional career, developing skills that would be applicable in a professional arena.
But what do you see as the primary benefit of wargaming?
So like what I said before, it's about what you're trying to get out of it. For me, I'm intending to use wargaming as an element of the PhD that I want to do, because I think wargaming, simulation, future wargaming offers you, it offers you an opportunity that nothing else does to really map human behavior. So, and to sort of know yourself in the most proverb-like version of knowing yourself. So I've worked as staff on a couple of games, and you'll get people who are subject matter experts in their field. They've been working for decades. They're well-renowned. Everyone knows who they are. And they'll come into a game scenario, say, modeling a nuclear conflict, and they'll say, well, you can say what you want and make whatever argument you want, but there are no circumstances under which I will agree it is ever right to use nuclear weapons. And then by turn 8 or 9, you'll get them going, well, I really think we have to use nuclear weapons. And so it, when you take it as a given, I would never authorize that, because anyone who knows anything about it knows that nuclear weapons are just terrible. It's not a weapon you use when you want to win, because there's no real way to win, because it kind of destroys everything. So everyone intellectually knows that that's a bad choice. But that doesn't mean you won't ever find yourself in a situation where people will make that bad choice. And mapping how you get there, and also letting people know that you could get there, has, in my opinion, just infinite value for, say, preventing nuclear exchanges, for managing future wars. People, if you aren't honest with yourself about what you would do under the right stressors, you can't prepare for those stressors or avoid those stressors or mitigate those stressors. And then sometimes you wind up actually really making a decision that could make something terrible happen.
Thank you to all who participated on this podcast for sharing your thoughts on wargaming and highlighting how useful these games are as tools of active learning in academic and professional contexts. That concludes this edition of the War Studies Podcast. If you liked this podcast, don't forget to like, comment, and share it wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, for more news and information on upcoming events, please visit our website at kcl.ac.uk/warstudies, or follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening.